Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. I hope you are all settled in your easy chairs and just jiving to the sweet sounds of Jamaica. And I would like to welcome all my listeners and also our listeners online and those calling in. And tell you that this evening we're going. This is Ladies' Night. We're going to talk about some real passionate women that we are featuring this evening. That perhaps most of the people, all our Jamaican family all over the world, might not be too familiar with. And I see that I have my co-host and also my loyal listener from Brooklyn, home of the Yankees. So I'm going to be opening up the mic to them shortly. But before that, I just wanted to welcome all our listeners and hope that you're having a wonderful afternoon and you had a great week. You know, here in Atlanta, the weather is getting nice. It will soon be spring. And we celebrate our Dogwood Festival in a couple of months. So the city is starting to bloom. So let me say hello to our co-host. Good afternoon, good evening, Donna.
Good evening. How are you doing?
That's wonderful. Where do you are you settled in your easy chair?
Yes, I got up for a little while, you know, I had to dance around a little bit, and was looking forward to ladies' night, so, you know, getting into the ladies' night mode, and so now I'm settled back into my easy chair.
All right. Do you feel those cool trade winds blowing across your chair?
Oh, well, you know, I think I made some of my own trade winds as I was dancing.
Well, you know, I always inform our listeners that a labrish in Jamaica is just a relaxed evening when friends or a group of people of similar interests get together to just chill and chat. So let's open the mic up. Hello, loyal listener from Brooklyn. Are you there?
It would be better served for you to say the listener from the Bronx.
Oh my goodness. I always think you're from Brooklyn. I mean, I don't know why. I suppose because I lived in Brooklyn for so long. And when I was there, you lived in Brooklyn too.
Yeah.
So I can never get Brooklyn out of my mind. But pardon me, sir. Loyal listener from the Bronx, welcome. And what is the weather like in New York?
Wonderful.
Oh, great.
We're getting ready for the first day of spring.
Oh, yeah. I know that is after my birthday, the 21st. I have a birthday coming up on the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to, any of my listeners that have birthdays this month, I want to say happy birthday. And we know that we're born the best month of the year. I mean, what could be nicer than the month of spring, right?
September.
And I just want to tell our listeners that if they would like to interact with us, those calling in, do hit 1 on your keypad, and then I will see a raised hand and know that you want to say hi or to help and join in the labrish. And I just want to mention that this week, supporting our mission to enlighten the diaspora, we are celebrating two female passionate history-making Jamaicans, one in the past, and of course, one current one will be our person of the week. And this evening, I am not sure that many of our listeners know about this person, because I know I never did. And her name is Yuma Marson, Marson. And she was born in 1909, and she lived until 1965. And actually, this woman was the forerunner of contemporary black writers. She was born in St. Elizabeth. So if there are any of our listeners out there from St. Elizabeth, you know you had a very special, passionate woman from law going way back. Now, Donna, did you find some information? Unfortunately, I must confess to my listeners that I had one of those days that, you know, you can write off. So I misplaced all my papers on our person that I'm discussing. So you'll have to bear with me here while I can get tapped in from my co-host. Did you find anything I asked for?
Great. Her actual full name was Una Maud Victoria Marson.
Wow.
She was a Jamaican feminist, activist, writer, producing poems, plays, and programs for the BBC. And she was born in Santa Cruz, Jamaica, in the parish of St. Elizabeth. And she was
I didn't have the city, so that's great. Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz is a very popular place. We, you know, almost every Jamaican knows, they don't necessarily physically know it, but they'll know about Santa Cruz. And I just want to, since I'm a senior, I want to throw in here that I think that is where the train stopped, Leah, the diesel in those days. It was diesel that I used to travel from Kingston on when I visited my mother's hometown in Savannah Lamar, which we call Sav Lamar. And then we took the Royal Mail from Santa Cruz to wherever it is we were going. But go on, Donna.
She was the youngest of six children of Reverend Solomon Isaac, who was a Baptist parson, and Ada Marson. Una had a middle-class upbringing, was very close to her father. As a child, before going to school, she was an avid reader, and this kind of, I guess, lays into effect the reason why she really got into also becoming a writer and all. But at the age of 10, she was enrolled at Hampton High, a girls' boarding school in Jamaica, of which her father was on the board of trustees. However, that same year, Reverend Isaac died, leaving the family with financial problems, so she moved to Kingston, Jamaica, and she finished high school at Hampton High but did not go on for a college education. And when she left Hampton, she found work in Kingston as a volunteer social worker and used the secretarial skills she learned, such as stenography, there and that she had learned in school. And in 1926, she was appointed assistant editor of the Jamaican political journal, Jamaica Critic.
What was that year?
1926.
Wow.
Her years at Jamaica Critic taught her journalism skills as well as influenced her political and social opinions and inspired her to create her own publication. In fact, in 1928, she became Jamaica's first female editor and producer of her own magazine. And what's really neat is the name of it. It's called The Cosmopolitan.
Wow. Isn't that something? I just want to throw this out to our listeners. If anyone knew about this before and have any, you know, comments on it, do, you know, at the end of this, we're going to ask you, you know, to participate, because this was all fascinating news to me when I researched it. You know, research is my passion. So, and to support what we're trying to do here in the backyard is to get people to know more about our past and the people from our past that sort of made a difference. And the culture that we grew up in. And I'm just amazed at all the things we did not know. Because I never heard of this woman before. I never learned about her in school or anything. So go on, Donna. Let's know more about this great gal.
Well, what's kind of interesting about her is that her publication, the articles, were on feminist topics, local social issues, workers' rights, and really was aimed at young, middle-class Jamaican audience. And her articles encouraged women to join the workforce, to become more politically active, and also featured Jamaican poetry and literature from Marson's fellow members of the Jamaican Poetry League, started by a lady named Claire McFarlane. And in 1930, Marson's published her first collection of poems entitled Tropic Reverie.
Wow.
And that dealt with love and nature and elements of feminism. And she won a Musgrave Medal from the Institute of Jamaica. Her poems about love were somewhat misunderstood by friends and critics, but she still, you know, was awarded because of the other elements of her poetry. But at any rate, due to financial difficulties, you know, she ended up pretty much ceasing that publication. And in 1931, she published another collection of poems called Heights and Depths, which dealt with love and social issues. And then she wrote her first play in 1931 called At What Price? The play is about a Jamaican girl who moves from the country into the city of Jamaica to work as a stenographer and falls in love with her white male boss. It opened in Jamaica and later London to critical acclaim. In 1932, she decided to go to London to find a broader audience for her work and to experience life outside of Jamaica.
Ah, that's the traveler in us.
Yeah. And she initially, what was kind of interesting is that she said she initially only went there to stay for maybe a couple of weeks, but from 1932 to 1945, she moved back and forth between London and Jamaica and continued to contribute to politics. But instead of focusing on writing for magazines, she wrote for newspapers then. And her own literary work in order to get her political ideas across. And she kept writing to advocate feminism, but one of her new emphases was on the race issue in England. And she first moved to London in 1992. The racism and sexism
1932,
yeah.
Right.
The racism and sexism she met there transformed both her life and her poetry. Her voice and poetry became more focused on the identity of black women in England. In this period, then, Mason not only continued to write about women's roles in society, but also put into mix the issues faced by black people who lived in England. And what was interesting that was noted was that black people have lived actually in England longer than they have in the United States.
Uh-huh.
And but anyway, in July of 1933, she wrote a very interesting poem called "Nigger," which appeared in the League of Colored People's Journal. And really, it was just what she wanted to do was bring about a forceful poem that people would say what, and to deal with addressing racism.
Right.
And she Yeah, she wanted to get your attention so that she could deal with the issue that she wanted to talk about.
Right.
And yeah. So, at any rate, she was in the London branch of the International Alliance of Women, a global feminist organization. And by 1935, she was involved in the International Alliance of Women, based in Istanbul, which is kind of interesting. And she returned to Jamaica in 1936. Where one of her goals was to promote national literature. One step she took in achieving this goal was to help the Kingston Reader and Writers Club, as well as the Kingston Jamaica Club. She also founded the Jamaica Save the Children Fund, an organization that raised funds to give the poor children money to get a basic education. In promoting Jamaican literature, she published Moth and the Star in 1937, many poems in that volume demonstrate how, despite the media's portrayal of black women had inferior beauty when compared to whites, black women should still be confident in their own physical beauty. This theme is seen in Cinema Eyes, Little Brown Girl, Black is Fancy, and Kinky Hair Blues. However, Mason herself was affected by the stereotype of superior white beauty. Mason herself, her biographer, tells us within months of her arrival in Britain, stopped straightening her hair and went completely natural. Mm-hmm. Going along with her feminist principles, she worked with Louise Bennett to create another play called London Calling, which is about women who moved to London to further their education. However, the woman became homesick and returned to Jamaica. But this play shows how the main character is a strong heroine being able to force herself to return to London in order to finish her education. And also in the feminist vein, she wrote Public Opinion, contributing to the feminist column. Marston's third play, Pocomania, is about
a... we're quite familiar with that word.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is about a woman named Stella who's looking for an exciting life. And critics suggest that this play is significant because it demonstrates how an Afro-religious cult affects middle-class women. Pocomania is also one of Marston's most important works because she was able to put the essence of the Jamaican culture into this play. And critics such as Ivy Baxter said that Pocomania was a break in tradition because it talked about a cult from the country and as such represented a turning point in what was acceptable on the stage.
Okay, I just want to make a comment there because Ivy Baxter was one of the first creative dancing instructors in Jamaica. Leigh, do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay. And I was one of her students. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I didn't even know about her then. I mean, I was pretty young, but I didn't really know about her. I don't remember that name at all.
And I'm hoping that some of our callers that might be can relate to some of this will really join the Labridge. So just raise your hands if you want to join the Labridge. Okay, go on.
In 1937, Marson wrote a poem called, I think it's Quashy, Q-U-A-S-H.
Quashy, yes. You're close.
Quashy comes to London, which is the perspective of England and a Caribbean narrative. In Caribbean dialect, Quashy means gullible or unsophisticated.
Exactly.
Although initially impressed, Quashy becomes disgusted with England because there is not enough good food there. The poem shows how, although England has good things to offer, it is Jamaican culture that Quashy misses, and therefore Marson implies that England is supposed to be the temporary venue for entertainment. The poem shows how it was possible for a writer to implement Jamaican dialect in a poem, and it is this usage of local dialect that situates Quashy's perspective of England as a Caribbean perspective. Mm-hmm. Marson returned to London in 1938 to continue her work on the Jamaican Save the Children project that she started in Jamaica, and also to be on the staff of the Jamaican Standard. In 1941, she was hired by the BBC Empire Service to work on a program in which World War II soldiers would have their messages read on the radio to their families. That's so nice. That is really neat.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And all this is going on, and I was there then. I didn't know a thing about it.
Wow.
I'm so excited. Excited to be uncovering all this cool information. I don't know about any of our listeners, but I am just, I mean, I feel like a gal of 16. A lot of people in the diaspora can relate to that, what that term means. So go on, Donna.
Okay. In 1942, she became the program's West Indies producer, and during the same year, she turned the program into Caribbean Voices, which was a form in which Caribbean literature work was read over the radio. Over 200 authors appeared on Caribbean Voices. I mean, she has a list of B.S., Naipaul, N-A-I-P-A-U-L, Samuel Sevan, George Lamming, Derek Walcott. She met such people as, of course, Claire McFarlane, Vic Reed, Andrew Salke, Langston Hughes, James Weldon Johnson. While she met quite a few writers from America, Jomo Kenyatta, Haile Selassie, Marcus Garvey, Amy Garvey, Nancy Cunard, Sylvia Pankhurst, Winifred Holtby, Paul Robeson, John Naysfield, Louis McNeese, T.S. Eliot, George Orwell. Wow. The latter helped Marson edit the show before she turned it into the Caribbean Voices. However, despite these experiences and personal connection, there's a strong sense in Marson's poetry and in Jarrett McCauley's biography, Life of Una Marson, that Marson remains something of an isolated and marginal figure.
Mm-hmm.
And
I never heard of her, frankly. And as I say, I would love some of our listeners possibly that might have is familiar with all this. Information to just sort of join us and let us know what they know, because this is all Greek to me.
Yeah. Well, also just want to just make sure that everyone knows to, you know, go to backyardlabridge.com and you can go on there and, of course, you know, leave a footprint there, which is, you know, your information, build your own profile, and so that you can definitely keep informed as to, you know, some of the things that we're doing and some things that that we're going to be discussing maybe ahead of time. Get the emails from us so that you can kind of, you know, join in the discussion. And I would go to backyardlabridge.com. And I'll put, life after World War II, it was 1945 to 1965, and they said that a lot of the, you know, details of her life are pretty much limited. Those pertaining to her personal and professional life post-1945 are really hard to come by. In 1945, she did publish a poetry collection entitled Towards the Stars. This collection was kind of like a shift in the focus of her poetry. While she once wrote about female sadness, over lost love, poems from Towards the Stars were more focused on the independent woman. Although this time Marson wrote at least one article entitled We Want Books, But Do We Encourage Other Writers? In an effort to spur Caribbean nationalism through literature, her efforts outside her writing seemed to work in collaboration with these sentiments. Although conflicting stories offer little concrete evidence about what she exactly did. Sources differ in outlining Marson's personal life during this time. Author Eric Water states that Marson was a secretary for the Pioneer Press, a publishing company in Jamaica for Jamaican authors. This source believes she then moved to Washington, D.C. in 1950s, where she met and married a dentist named Peter Staples. The two allegedly divorced, allowing Marson to travel to England, Israel, then back to Jamaica, where she died in 1965. Another source by Lee Jenkins offered a very different tale of Marson's personal life. This source says that Marson was sent to a mental hospital following a breakdown during the years 1945 to 49. After being released, she founded the Pioneer Press. This source claims that Marson then went to the United States in the 1950s, where she had another breakdown and was admitted to St. Elizabeth's Asylum. Following this, Marson returned to Jamaica, where she rallied against Rastafarian discrimination. She then went to Israel for a women's conference, an experience which she discussed in her last radio broadcast for Women's Hour on BBC. The conflicting details regarding Marson's personal life show that there is very little information available about her. For example, Water's article quotes Marson's criticisms of Porgy and Bess, yet provides no citation of this work. And in combination with this, is a limited record of her writings during this period of time. Many of her works were left unpublished or only circulated in Jamaica. Most of these writings are only available in the Institute of Jamaica in Kingston. Given these constraints, it's difficult to understand the whole Una Marson's accomplishments during the final periods of her life. So critics have both praised and dismissed her poetry. She's been criticized for mimicking European style. For example, Marson's poems mimic the style of Kipling's poem. Arthur Denise Narain suggests that Marson's was overlooked because her poetry concerned the conditions and status of females was not important to the audience at the time the works were produced. And other critics, by contrast, praise Marson for her modern style. Some, like Narain, even suggest that her mimicking challenged conventional poetry at a time and in an effort to criticize European poets. Regardless, Marson was active in the West Indian writing community during that period. Her involvement in the Caribbean Voices was important to publicizing Caribbean literature internationally, as well as spurning nationalism within the Caribbean islands which she represented.
Well, you're talking about Marcia now, who's the person who penned her autograph, Uma's autograph, aren't you?
I'm sorry?
Who were you describing in the last couple of minutes?
The last part, what?
Marcia.
Una Marson's. What I was saying was that...
I got you. I thought you were calling a different name.
Various critics, that was all.
Right. Well, actually, there's somebody wrote a biography, and that woman, I read about her too. She's not a Jamaican. I think she's an African that was born. She's born in London of African parents, and she is the one who really is doing or did a lot of writing about her.
Which brings me to the point of people having an opportunity, and you don't have to, I'm not thinking of necessarily that you have big accomplishments, but Donna, we say it all the time, the importance of leaving a footprint and having some documentation on your life. As individuals, all our lives are important. Every one of us, there's nobody else on earth like us. We are individually unique. And with the technology we have nowadays, we can leave a lasting footprint, can't we, Donna?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's so important for us to tell our own story.
Right, because here it is now. This woman's story is being pieced together by other people.
Yeah.
You know, even though she had so much passion during the time of her life, she had so much passion about what she was about and what she wanted, the voice that she wanted to put forth to whoever would listen. But I want to give you an interesting thing that happened to me. You know, when I sent out the email about the show, you know, I send everybody on my list. And then I got this email from this one listener. And sometimes when people sign up, I never know whether they're male or female. But he asked me, apparently, well, it's a man, and he asked me to take him off my mailing list. Because this woman was gay. I thought it was very funny. But I suppose because she, you know, I don't know the age group of this person. But you can imagine someone standing up for women's rights, especially a black woman in England, in the 30s, 1920-something.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I mean, 1930-something, whatever time she was there. It wasn't very popular, is what I'm trying to say. It wasn't very popular in Jamaica either.
Yeah. Well, you know, that the thing about it is when you break it down, you have to look at feminism hasn't been a very highly regarded type of situation anyway, be it in the United States or anywhere else. And so when you couple that with the fact that, I mean, look at, you know, you have to also add in their race on top of it, you know, and then you know, you're looking at, so you have a woman, you got the race issue going on, and then you look at the fact that you're in, like, the Caribbean, or even if you were, like, you know, in a Latin country or something like that, where those types of things aren't appreciated at all, and you might be categorized. I mean, it's almost like a person, I remember seeing a story of this lady who was doing certain healings, and all of a sudden she became a witch and a heretic, you know.
Right.
So you get categorized maybe based upon, you know, what you're doing. Oh, you want to stand up for women, or you're male bashing or something, you know, as opposed to seeing it as, you know, people just wanting their rights, period, you know.
Right. I want to invite our listeners to raise their hands if they would like to participate, and to let everybody know that you are listening to Backyard Labrish. We're here every Wednesday at 8 o'clock. We usually have what I think is an interesting subject. However, we are open to ideas, so if any of our listeners online or calling in has an idea about something that they would like us to labrish about, do let us know by going to our website and just sending us an email. We will respond, and we welcome your comments, and we hope that you're enjoying the labrish in the backyard. So, again, any of the listeners that want to, we have a couple of callers, so if you want to join the labrish, just hit 1 on your phone. And again, I apologize. We'll soon be chatting in the chat room, but if you're listening online, please enjoy it. And I want to just remind our listeners that you don't have to be tied to the phone. Just put your phone on speaker if you just want to listen and spend some time with us. And same thing if you're working online, you can just minimize the website and you can listen in the background while you do your work or whatever else you're doing, whether you're surfing the net or answering your email. So it's just a relaxed hour that we like to chill out and remember our past for the people who moved from Jamaica perhaps some time ago, or even Jamaicans, if you're listening in Jamaica, and you know how it used to be back in the days, or you are interested in history. So we're trying to engage everybody that love culture, and especially love the rich Jamaican culture. Because they're, I think, you know, we're so unique. There's nobody else like us. So I am like a little girl that have just discovered some delicious candy when I stumble upon or discover something new that I never knew before about a Jamaican or about Jamaica itself. So I'm just having a ball doing these shows, and I think it's just making me into a spring chicken. So as I get ready to celebrate my, and I'm not afraid of the numbers, as a matter of fact, I'm very proud of it. I'm getting ready to celebrate my 74th birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Friday. So I am just encouraging all the senior Jamaicans or the seniors at large to get involved with the technology. It's not as scary as you might think to be online or to send an email or to build a profile. It's very simple. And once you get the hang of it, I think you'll enjoy it. And a lot of seniors, I think that, you know, a lot of, when you say to them a chat room, they just think that it's not something that they would want to participate in. It doesn't sound like something that is safe, or it doesn't sound like something that mature people do. It's something for teenagers. But it's that and more. You know, it's a way to communicate instantly. You do not have to use a email. You don't have to open up your email and have a whole lot in there and pick out the ones that you want to listen to. When you're in a chat room, it's just the people who would be involved in that group that would be in the chat room together. And one of the features that we do have on our website is that you can arrange a private chat. That means that if you're a member of the Backyard and you want to talk to your relatives or friends all over the world, you would just send them an email with a special code that would get you all in that particular chat room at a specified time. And instantly you could be communicating with each other live. I mean, I think there's a feature there that you can even do a video thing. So, you know, join us in the backyard and let us explore together and learn together and have some fun. So, Mr. loyal listener from the Bronx, home of the Yankees.
Hey.
Were you familiar with this person?
Yeah, this is interesting. I thought that I would mention Una to my cousin in London and ask her to do some research on her work with the Caribbean Voices. She likes to do that sort of thing.
Oh, great. Perhaps we can get her on the show one night.
Well, you know, being in London there, it's...
The time difference.
It's difficult.
Right.
She is the one that was honored in Jamaica for her work in the UK.
Oh, wonderful.
On behalf of Jamaican women.
Uh-huh.
So...
If she ever listens to the show, you do send her a link.
I sent a link earlier on, but probably.
Well, I just want to let you and all our listeners know, if you ever want someone, you know, that perhaps is far away from you, to listen to the show, or Just send them a link, and they all of the shows are archived. Once you send them a link, then they once they click on that link, they'll see all the shows that we've ever done, and they can select the ones that they want to listen to because, you know, it has the caption as to what it was about.
Yeah.
However, you know, so she can listen to the show there. And also, we would really love for other people to get involved in the backyard. That is the website at www.backyardlabrish.com, and really share some information about what they're doing, or what if they know about anybody else that, you know, is doing anything or has done something that the rest of the people in that less of our listeners might be interested in. We're just open to, this is a Labrish, so we want to talk about, you know, interesting things that people discover. So please, free, we want this to be a friendly, warm, cozy hour that you spend with us, and also, you know, a time to learn something and to reminisce. So we're really wanting to create a community of like minds. So do join us.
Listen
yeah.
to this. I'm still referring to that cousin of mine in London. I discussed with her son, who was performing in New York on Sunday, to be on the show. I told him what the show was all about, and that we like to highlight Jamaicans who are abroad, and in particular somebody like him who is a son of a Jamaican.
Oh, sure.
And he's very famous in Europe as a musician.
Wow.
So, I was a guest of his at Radio City Music Hall on Sunday evening.
Wow. Now, what does he do? Sing,
well,
play? What does he do?
Well, he, in the first place, he, like, arranges and produces the show. But on the other hand, he plays particularly the trumpet and the saxophone. But when called, then he can, you know, fill in for anybody else's.
Wow,
yeah,
that's
so
interesting.
The tour went to L.A. before it came to New York.
And what is his name?
His name?
Uh-huh.
His name is Kevin Robinson.
Okay, so so we will celebrate Kevin this evening because, you know, we need to celebrate all our people, young and old.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as I delve more into my culture of the past and, you know, what's happening currently, I am so inspired, and I hope that our show, when people listen to it, they will be inspired, especially the young people, to know that, you know, we've had Jamaicans making a difference all over the world from way back in the 1800s. I mean, we just discover new ones all the time. Here was this particular woman who, as I said, when women were not, I remember, you know, in the old days, as you know, Leigh, women did not have important positions in the business world.
Well, it was a man's world then.
Right. It was mostly, you know, they were in the homes. I think my mother might have been the first one of her generation. Her mother did not work. I know my mother did.
Mm.
And so that was the first generation from that line that would be working. I think so was yours, Leigh. I remembered your mother every time I went down King Street. So I don't think her mother worked before that. So women were sort of not really confined, because I don't know if they considered themselves confined then. But I know even in this woman was born in 1909, you know, and by 1932, she was in London, you know, doing her thing. And I am just surprised that, you know, she was involved with Louise Bennett and all of that. And I don't remember hearing of her at all, whatever she accomplished. Mm. And also, you know, I was involved with Ivy Baxter. So I just never, ever heard of her. So again, you know, anybody that has information about anything like this, do let us know. Drop by our website and keep us informed.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, one of the things that you have to look at is what she did was something that the same thing that you would say black preachers or maybe even slaves done is what slaves did was they talked about a lot of things through song. Preachers would talk about a lot of things that were unjust through their sermons until they became monitored or they were taken over by, you know, other, versus a black preacher preaching to the black congregation. Some of them were taken over by white preachers so that way they could send the message that they wanted. And pretty much what she did was express various things that she saw through her poetry and through her writings with the hope of, you know, bringing it to light as well as hopefully making a difference. And then what she did was she says, okay, well, it's one thing for me to kind of talk about it or write about it in poetry, but now let me get a little bit more active in some of the things that I truly believe in, you know, be it helping, you know, she, you know, helping the Rastafarian children, or where she, you know, set up that, you know, the Save the Children's Fund, you know, to assist them, you know, to be it talking about the, you know, just the idea of faith. Various topics that she felt were important, she moved to action as well.
And
maybe that's one of the reasons why she became, you know, they kind of pushed her into the corner, you know, so that, okay, let's not let everybody know about her, you know, because she might, you know, cause confusion or something.
Right. I thought it was interesting that she worked with Haile Selassie. You know, Lay? Did you know that?
Yeah, she probably interviewed him or something like that.
No, actually, when my document said that she actually worked with him or for him. She was involved with him, you know, because she was in England for a long time.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I just really think that this is all so cool. So,
yeah.
I want to welcome my listener from 718-798, and do let us know if you want to join the Labrish by hitting one on your button. Okay.
You know, one of the things that everyone should take from this is that if she had only published her own story instead of life, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a long life, if she, you know, tell your own story, but she never published her own story, and I mean, you read about all the things that she's accomplished, and what was her mindset, you know, just speaking her own mind. That would have been just really interesting to see. And the sad part about it, I think, is that because so many people, you know, it's kind of like when you see people get up and they'll say, yeah, well, such and such set the way for me. Well, in a sense, she laid a foundation, you know, because of the fact that she had her, you know, was one of the first you know, people, radio producer on BBC, well, she made a foundation for other people, be they men or women, you know, that are black, to be able to do the same type of thing. And so, you know, it's like, where's her work at? I mean, if she was recorded, where's that work at? Or did they record over it? I mean, you know, that would tell a lot about her, I would think.
Right. Another thing, you know, they are describing her, or the author who wrote her biography is describing her as the forerunner of contemporary black writers in the all of the Caribbean.
Wow.
Was the first one that was doing that kind of thing. And, you know, the first at anything is always great. Like our person of the week last week, you know, was the first Jamaican, and first black, and he happens to be Jamaican. So I want to take the time now to introduce our person of the week for this week. So this wonderful Miss Marson was in the past. She's no longer with us, but we are celebrating today. A person of the week is Dr. Let me get her name right here. Donna, my computer.
Dr. Monique.
Oh, Ford. Yes,
Ford.
Dr. Monique Ford.
Yeah.
And she is a beautiful. I'm looking at her picture here. Actually, I got this from the Jamaica newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And they say during her first clinical year at the University of the West Indies, she worked with a Mayo-trained cardiologist. But I shouldn't start there because it started off by saying that, you know, I want to start off by saying that when people have a dream, when anyone has a dream and really stick with their dream, it to me, the universe just, you know, works out everything for you. Because apparently this young lady, and I call her a young lady when you compare it to her, to me, she's pretty young anyhow, Dr. Monique Ford. The article says, destiny appears to have conspired to link her with the prestigious Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, in the United States, because it's just a connection that really occurred in Jamaica. She attended the University of the West Indies and worked with some Mayo-trained cardiologists. And she was fascinated with them and that particular discipline, cardiology, I suppose. Then in her biochemistry final exams, her external examiner was a professor also from the Mayo, connection, with a Mayo connection. Now, she finished at the top of her second year class, earning a special award. This is still while she was at the University of the West Indies. But she got a scholarship to the Mayo School. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Because it started with her fascination just when she was being trained. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And everything just sort of worked together. So she's now in Minnesota with the state capital, Minneapolis, and the Canadian border to the north, and cornfields in every direction. She has to drive 20 miles to the clinic, but she's a top researcher. It's a top research facility, you know, that place. And I suppose it's just an answer to her dreams is what this is actually saying, because during her time at UC, she didn't really have, let's say, a specific plan to be involved with the Mayo Clinic. It just happened and started with her fascination of the trainers that she had. But everything sort of put itself together. And we want to celebrate her because she has got several awards for her research. You know, she's now at the Mayo Clinic in Massachusetts. So being there is an answer to her dreams, and she's excelling in every area that you can think of. The only thing is, just like our lady of the past, Jamaicans get homesick. They miss their island. And I'm trying to see where she was actually born, what part of Jamaica. She was born, but I don't see it here in the write-up. This write-up came from the Jamaican Gleaner. And I want to also let people know that I get a lot of my material from Jamaica.com. They have a website that highlights the articles from the Jamaican Gleaner every day. And, you know, they always have some interesting blogs there. So I would like to give them some promotion and ask our listeners to check them out also. So we have a couple more minutes. Does my loyal listener or my co-host have any parting words? Where we have a couple of minutes left.
Nothing. Earth shaking this week, I'm telling you. Don't forget now, you're talking about great women.
Oh, yes, it's ladies' night.
Yeah. So I'm a little bit limited in that area there.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me just say a little bit more about Dr. Ford. Her long-term dream is to return to Jamaica. She's now here in the United States. To open a catheterization center. Coronary disease is the number one killer in both developed and developing countries. In Jamaica, someone who lacks the resources to fly to Miami or simply get special treatment will likely die. I want to change that. Here's another passionate young woman. In addition to lots of startup capital and more study, realizing that dream will require much traveling, something which the doctor claims to relish. For now, I'd love to go to Europe and see the works of the Impressionists close up. That's her current wish. But long term, she wants to go back to Jamaica and open a clinic. I just thought that was very commendable. And I think that's mostly what I have on her right now. We want to wish her all the best and hope that she, and I'm sure that with the passion she has and the love of her country, that she will accomplish her dreams. Just like the women in our past who forged ahead and, you know, did what they wanted to do, what they were passionate about. I want to encourage all the young professionals, those that have graduated and are doing something, or those that are still in school, to take strength from that. Both the men and the women, we come from a very strong-willed and determined and passionate country of wonderful people. Silence, hello.
Hi.
Are you there? With that, Donna, do you have any parting words?
Nope, I just I looked over just a little bit about her, and I mean, again, it's just like you said, you know, just about moving in the direction of your dreams and believing in yourself and, you know, just...
Sticking with it. You know, a lot of young people give up. If things happen right away, you know.
Right. But again, you know, one of the things that, you know, they talked about, one of the things that I can say that they talked about was that her parents, you know, one of the biggest things for them was the quality of education, and they encouraged her to become a scientist. And so by the time she transitioned to Immaculate Conception High, She wanted to become more involved in the applied research, and she just, you know, stayed with it. And one of the things too that was really neat is that she had, I mean, she actually had a lot of support, a lot of people that watched her. You know, I mean, the sisters were, you know, at the school that she went to, they kept a watchful eye over her, and they saw how, you know, she was disciplined. And it just, you know, just all, you know, fell in line, you know, really fell in line for her. And so I'm just, you know, just, again, like you said, you know, it's just about, you know, staying focused and, you know, being determined and moving forward. But of course, you know, it's always nice when you have people around you that support you, encourage you. And particularly encourage you to, you know, to definitely do, you know, to have a strong sense of education.
Right. Which is something I really want to talk about, because I am, you know, the word now is that the people, the new generation of women in Jamaica don't seem to be as focused on the importance of educating their children as they were in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there needs to be a educational program for them, you know, the parents, about the importance of this, because somewhere along the line, it seemed to have diminished, or, you know, it's not as strong as it used to be. I'm glad you brought that up, Donna, because, you know, right now our educational system currently is going through sort of a transition where we're not having the strong support of the parents that we used to have. Because even the children from, you know, what we would call the people who are not really as economically secure as the middle class were always interested in having their children educated. You know, that was the number one priority in the old days. But, you know, in the modern world, I'm sure it's happening all over the world, but as Jamaica being such a small country, I just want to encourage any groups that are involved in supporting anything out there to think about, you know, a special education program for the parents to realize how important it is to support the children and encourage children to have a strong educational background, because as the world around us change, it's going to become more important,
right,
for the children to be educated, you know, and to really have a strong sense of becoming successful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that you pointed that out, you know, because in all of these cases, I'm sure it mentioned about our first person that we discussed having a strong Baptist upbringing. Remember that, Donna?
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, there was a lot of structure and all of that there. Because this
right.
is like the foundation. It's like building the foundation of a skyscraper. You know, you got to have a strong foundation. The strongest of a foundation
was a pharmacy rep, and the other one was a teacher. So that gave her.
You're talking about Dr. Ford?
Yeah.
Okay.
Her parents, and, you know, they, of course, there were four children, but her parents, you know, were pretty disciplined themselves. I mean, having a pharmacy rep and a teacher, they knew, you know, what, you know, the importance and the merits behind, you know, having a quality education.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it, you know, I've been, one of the things that I've been encountering myself is that, there are certain stereotypes with regards to people that, you know, have the financial challenges that maybe the middle class doesn't. And that is that they don't care or that they don't want to participate. And I think a big part of it really is an intimidation factor. You know, when you haven't necessarily gone on, you know, I mean, I get intimidated myself when I look at some of my children's homework for high school and stuff, you know. But it doesn't mean that, you know, what has to happen. What I do still is I go to the school, I'll meet with the teachers, I email them online. But, you know, but it can be very intimidating for a person. You know, you got people that have not finished high school at all. And a lot of, you know, boys, once they hit that middle school point, if they've missed something, you can forget about it. You know, they're through. They're out of the, I mean, they're not even going to high school. And if they do, somebody's just passing them along, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, and it's kind of hard when you're having financial challenges. A lot of the people work at two jobs. It's kind of hard trying to figure out how do you really get them. It's not that they don't care. It's just that maybe they're over, you know, exhausted or something. And so you have to, the only way to really, I'm going to tell you, I agree with the president, Barack Obama, that the if you haven't gotten it by an early education, it becomes much more difficult because people spend a lot more time when a child is young. That, you know, they're still, you know, in elementary school, they're still a baby, their parents spend much more time at PTA meetings and all those things. And you really have to get that flowing not just for the kids in early education, because their brains are pretty much like over 50% developed by the time they're 5 years old. That's why I always tell people, you know, teach your child a foreign language while they're young. But it's also the early education time is the time also to get the parents in a system of being involved in the process. If they haven't gotten that foundation down, you know, on their own before, then it's like parenting skills. It's amazing how you have to take lessons to drive a car, but you don't have to be a parent. You know, it's optional if you want to go to Lamaze class or if you want to take parenting classes, and it shouldn't be optional. It really should be something that, you know, is required. I think
I should start teaching parenting in school, actually. Anyway, I want to remind our listeners again that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. We're almost at the end of our Labrish, so if any of our callers want to interact with us, just hit 1 on your keypad. And
Bronx,
we're here every Wednesday. Beg your pardon?
The Bronx is going to say good night.
Okay, good night, Mr. Bronx, and thanks for hanging with us. We hope
and
that...
I have some tax problems to... continue into the night with a red stripe beer.
Oh, well, just chill back as you do that.
Yeah.
He's having a taste of home.
Okay, I hear Donna laughing. She recognizes what I just said.
Right. Enjoy.
Okay, good night.
So you get the figures
good
right.
Yes, yes. Good night, Donna.
Good night, Lay.
All right. Well, I want to ask our listeners to join us again next week at 8 o'clock, same number, same website. We'll be sending out an email with our topic of the week. And again, thank you for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed the show. We certainly enjoyed the Labrish. So bye-bye. See you next week.
All right. Good night.
Night.